Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in. It is the Thursday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody doing well. It's been a pretty pleasant day. Got a good bit of rain yesterday, and it's cooled things off a little bit. Looks like it's going to stay pretty pleasant for the next few days. Maybe a little more rain. Hopefully not on Saturday, but looks like temperature's going to be pretty mild.
A high in the 70s on Saturday?
I'm seeing anywhere from the upper 70s to the low 80s, so it's not going to be too bad at all. So that's nice. Like I said, is there the one you're looking at, is it still talking about some possible rain in the afternoon and early evening?
I believe, yeah. Apple had a high of 78 for Saturday earlier today. They've revised that to 80.
Yeah.
And there is some
like
chance.
A 40% last time I looked.
Some chance of rain, predominantly
late afternoon.
Before
evening.
6 p.m., though.
Yeah.
I think they've got like noon to 3 as the window.
Oh, okay.
Where you could get most of the rain on Saturday, but who knows?
You don't want it to rain at homecoming. You know, don't want it to rain. Really, you don't want it to rain during your home games anyway, unless you're a team that, you know, really you want to slow down the opponent or something. I don't think that's the case this week. You didn't want to slow down Samford, but I think Auburn needs to work on some things, and we'll talk about that. But, yeah, welcome in. It is the Thursday Drive, and we have our second of our back-to-back cross-country travelers who's still rubbing his eyes a little bit. Jason Caldwell yesterday was saying he still hasn't quite recovered.
Yeah.
Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer here with us in the studio, and you're still not 100%.
Not 100%. My sleep schedule got super thrown off over the weekend, but it was a fun trip, great trip. I mean, shout out to Jason. He drove us for most of the trip that we were on. And, like, when we got back to Auburn on Sunday night, he was like, yeah, I'm going to have to get up at, like, 6 o'clock tomorrow morning.
Help get ready for school.
Get ready for school, yeah. And so it's just like he had it a lot worse than I did, but I think I'm there. I think I'm back.
You made it to the press conference on Monday.
Yeah. Adam Cole was the one. I don't know if you heard anything about that. Adam Cole took a red eye from San Francisco on Sunday night. Got to Atlanta at about 8 o'clock, 8 or 9 o'clock.
And just drove straight to the press conference.
Yep.
Yeah, attaboy. Yeah. Adam Cole from the Opelika Auburn News doing a great job.
But yeah, no, back. Awesome trip. Learned a lot about this team, I think, and it makes for a much more interesting FCS game than you normally get because of what we saw last week.
I think Auburn needs to work on some things this week. They don't need to just go out and, you know, hand the ball off and because they could win the game doing that
easily. You look at Samford last week, lost to Western Carolina 30-7.
Man, the stats tell you it could have been a whole lot worse.
It could have been a whole lot worse. I mean,
they gave up almost 300 yards
both ways.
Yeah, it was like 280 something and 260 something rushing and passing.
It was rough for sure. And Samford, they're going to throw the ball. They're really good at throwing the ball. They have been for years. It's going to be a test where, you know, I would be surprised if Auburn shut out Samford. I would be surprised. They're going to get some opportunities to make some things happen. But so defense has given up a lot. They don't really run the ball that much. Coming off of a tough loss to a team that, I think Western Carolina, we weren't expecting to be in the FCS, wasn't expected to be like a powerhouse by any means. So it's an interesting matchup. It's an opportunity for Auburn to just be like, hey, this is a game in front of fans, at home, you know, should be a good crowd again, where you can work some stuff out, specifically through the air. I'm sure y'all have talked about it this week. Dan and I talked about it on our podcast and went up this morning. You go back. 2017, week two, Auburn looks dreadful at Clemson on the road. The next week, they let Jarrett Stidham air it out, 32-37 against Mercer. They fumbled the ball in that game, so it was closer than expected. But they figure some things out, passing the ball, let him throw it around. And then a week later, they go to Missouri for their SEC opener, air it out in that game, and get a win. A&M's different. Cal's different, you know, than the matchups we saw in 2017. But I do think it is an opportunity for Auburn to try to figure some stuff out through the air, see who they can trust, because they got to start game planning for this brutal SEC stretch coming up, and they got to know who they can trust in the passing game.
Yeah, it's got to be more than just Jay Fair and Javarius Johnson or Rivaldo Fairweather. Those are the three guys right now. You feel like, okay, you can count on those guys.
Yeah,
but they're not your typical. None of those are your typical outside receivers.
You could use Rivaldo, I think, in some split out sets. Obviously, the game-winning touchdown came on that. But yes, you need some outside receivers, some bigger guys to step up and make some plays. Shane Hooks has probably been the guy who's gotten the most looks. And I think, you know, had some tough plays. If he can step up, like, this could be a big Shane Hooks game. You know, go out there and overmatched opponent, go out there and put on a show. But also, I look at a guy like Camden Brown, who I watched pretty closely at practice on Tuesday, looked really good. Jair Shorter, Malcolm Johnson Jr., Omari Kelly feels like probably the best bet to get some more looks. He's out there a lot.
Yeah, he has. He just hadn't been targeted
much. Oh, man, and he was wide open on one of those plays. The play that Thorne got sacked on right after the big throw to Rivaldo, you go back and watch that play. Auburn gives up a sack. Thorne doesn't have time. If he's going in the progression, if he goes a split second, looks to the left, Omari Kelly is literally jumping up and down, waving his arms. He's that wide open, and they just couldn't get to him in time. So Omari feels like one of those guys that is doing a lot of the stuff that they need from the outside receivers, except for just catching the ball and making those plays.
I mean, these guys have been teammates long enough that you stop talking about like where they came from, but I can't help but wonder if in the case of Shorter and Hooks and Mardner, like these are guys getting their first taste of Power 5 football, maybe some of the maybe some of the things outside of just pass catching are elements that they're struggling with. Maybe they're not winning their. I mean, there's also look. I don't know who's winning their one-on-one matchups and who isn't.
From my view on Saturday night against Cal, not very many were doing it.
Yeah, that's what my younger son said. Because there were some people saying, well, the receiver's running wide open, and I asked Jason about that yesterday, and he said a couple of times were guys,
not very many. No.
But I think the fans were feeling he's holding the ball. There's got to be somebody open, but
yeah. It's everybody plays a part in it, and I'll say this. I'm not of the opinion that Philip Montgomery called a terrible game by any means. I will say that I was surprised to go back and watch and see how few RPOs they ran in that game and easy stuff. Go back again to that final drive. Not an RPO, but go back to that final drive, that slant to Jay Fair. That got him some good yardage right after. It was like a couple plays after the big throw to Rivaldo that flipped the field. There just wasn't very much of that. They didn't really do a ton of that in the game. And I feel like you could make it easier on Peyton Thorne in this. Now, Peyton Thorne, his opportunities in this game, first half, all the way until the fourth quarter, really didn't really throw the ball in the third quarter at all. He just missed throws. Like, he just didn't. He did not play well.
And you're right.
He missed throws he should have made mistakes he shouldn't have made. All that's true. But I do think to get him back into the groove and back into the rhythm, Auburn could have done a better job play calling wise and setting him up to get some easier throws, especially to guys like Jay Fair and Javarius Johnson, maybe in Rivaldo Fairweather, that you know you can trust right now. So maybe they do more of that on Saturday.
I mean, don't you just feel it? It felt like, well, Auburn was just going to be able to, they thought they'd just go and be vanilla, just run the ball, do a little play action stuff, not really show anything, and walk out with a win. That's what it felt like.
Yeah,
watching
it just went out of sorts, and the turnovers too, right? You know, fumbles are statistically a product of luck, just because the ball is shaped weird and it bounces funny. For Auburn to lose all of their fumbles, and for all of them to be reviewed, that was the other thing. It was like there were ones that were just they handed them the ball, but like you had to go down to see like at the molecule level,
but
they were right. So you usually don't turn the ball over that often. Statistically, if you go back and look at that game, that was worth about a touchdown of difference, the turnover luck in this game. So, I mean, it's stuff that you can clean up for sure. It all comes back to, I think, Peyton Thorne's got to throw the ball better when he has his opportunities. Auburn's got to get receivers that got to get open. I think the play calling and the strategy, the game planning, can be better on getting the ball in those guys' hands. I thought the offensive line played fairly well.
I thought they played okay.
Yeah. Just not clean at times.
Right.
You know, and that'll definitely hurt you. But you put that all together and you look at it and say, you know, all of this is fixable. You didn't come out of that Auburn-Cal game saying, like, oh, they've got no shot. Because even with, like, the passing game struggling like it did, when it absolutely had to down the stretch, it made the plays that it needed to. And I'm going back to something Damari Austin told us earlier this week, which was that drive, that's the team we feel like we can be. We know we can be that team more frequently. And I think that's true. It's just, can you do that more frequently, knowing that the competition is about to get a lot tougher?
Brad Law was on the show that comes on before us on the line, and he compared Saturday night to the Kansas State game, the Thursday night Kansas State game in 2014, when the Auburn offense did not look particularly sharp with Nick Marshall in year two going up. And they were, it was a lot of sort of weird things. The schedule had been disrupted because it was a Thursday night road game, and you're playing somewhere that you're, you know, it's unfamiliar and far away. And the offense had early struggles and struggled to really get into gear at any point. Brad Law points out Auburn scored 40-plus points in the next two games after that Kansas State game in 2014, including the deep frying of LSU. That season was shortly after that game against Kansas State. So offenses can turn it around, especially when the circumstances are, I mean,
it's just so much newness.
I would wonder if between, like you said, the novelty, the newness of all of it, and that early fumble that wasn't a touchdown officially, but was a big early setback. Mm-hmm. It felt like
four points of difference in the game was decided by four.
And you can also maybe point to the fact that the backup quarterback plays a little bit more than the backup quarterback probably did when Peyton was at Michigan State. I could see him pressing to try to make.
He has been a guy that we've heard about has pressed when he feels like. And that was something that I had heard about him from folks at Michigan State when he came down. Was just like, yeah, he has a tendency to be really hard on himself and force things at times.
And feel the pressure when things aren't going well. Yeah.
And you know, I don't think this is going to be a scenario where Auburn continues to do this quarterback shuffle. I think the explanation for the quarterback shuffle is pretty straightforward. Nothing was working on offense, and so they decided to use that package they have for Robbie Ashford between the 20s. That didn't work.
Yeah, they weren't in the red zone either a whole lot.
And when that didn't work, it looks bad, and everybody gets mad because, you know, you don't leave your quarterback in there. It's an idea that backfired. Personally, I've never called plays before, but it's like, I don't think it's the greatest use of your quarterback resources, but it's what they tried because they just felt like they needed to get a spark. It didn't work. They ended up making up for it in the end. It's just, I've seen a lot of Auburn fans this week get worried that this is going to be like a constant thing. And I just, from what Freeze has said and what we've heard throughout the week, I just don't think that's going to be the case. I'll say this about Freeze and his brutal honesty when it comes to the offense and just everything. From the very beginning, he's been pretty transparent about what this offense is, what he thinks it's at right now, what needs to get better. And so I don't see – when he comes out and says, yeah, this is that rotation, that's not what we want it to be, I think he's probably going to stick to it because I don't see that just being something. Now, you could get into a scenario –
he's going to stick to what he said, not stick to the rotation.
Right. I will say this, though. If Thorne continues to struggle, especially next week against Texas A&M, You could have a quarterback change. You could definitely have a quarterback change, but I don't think it's going to be this shuffle until somebody finds a spark. I think it's Peyton Thorne right now is the best bet for Auburn to run their full offense. If that changes, whether that is Robbie Ashford, Holden Garner stepping up, or Thorne stepping back, or a combination of those factors, then you'll reevaluate. But for right now, I don't think they want to go back to what they did against Cal because it was a desperate move that backfired.
Well, I mean, they're going to play teams much better than Cal,
and yes,
you do that against those teams, and yeah, you won't have a chance to win.
I wonder how tempted Hugh is to go more run heavy than he's ever gone before as a college football coach. Not just because you have the struggle at quarterback right now and receivers that, aside from 5 and 6, aren't winning their matchups, but also because he has 4 running backs he's excited about. And he talks about the struggle of how do you balance between, I mean, Batty, 3 plays, 1 touch on offense Saturday night. He praised Jeremiah Cobb a couple times this week. You know, I asked him about it at the conference call, but still offered that praise. And then there's also Jarquez and Damari. So I wonder if that's also weighing on him as far as how much should this offense emphasize the pass to be at its
maybe
best.
Not emphasize, but they're going to have to throw the ball.
Oh no,
they can't just put themselves in third and long. We've seen that way too many times. And that's absolutely. You talk about putting pressure on a quarterback. It's like, okay, we're only going to have you throw on third and long.
But there's a difference between 22 and 29 pass attempts per game. And there's a question of, you know,
in this league, do you have a dynamic enough running game to be able to do that?
No, they don't.
And only throw the ball 20 times
a game? I think they have
a
solid running game. I think they have the pieces to have a good running game. I don't think it is a 2013, we run it no matter what,
right?
You know, kind of thing, and you can't stop us.
We looked it up yesterday. I think Auburn, it was just under 20 pass attempts a game.
It was just over
20.4. And I think if you go to conference play, that number goes down. Auburn probably in league play 13.
It's hard to do that anymore.
Well, they went to Tennessee and just didn't even run the ball. Remember,
right.
I mean, hardly. You know, I mean, didn't
also,
throw the ball. I mean,
also had
like 7 passes or something.
Also had 1,000-yard rusher at quarterback.
Yes,
which is something Auburn, unless they were to make the change to Ashford and decide we're going to run the ball 70%+ of the time, they probably won't have a 1,000-yard rusher at quarterback this year. And I don't know what kind of offensive success they would have if they took that approach.
I don't think they have a personnel to be a run-heavy team. And there's not very many teams who can just do that, period. Now,
no.
You don't look around and say, hey, here's the team that just runs it a ton. Even Ole Miss, who runs because of the number of plays they run, they probably run more than anybody in the country, like outside of the option teams. But, like, I mean, even the option teams are going away. Like, Army just straight up does not run the triple option anymore, which is so weird to see. It's just changed. You need to be able to be more dynamic. And I think, again, Samford, great opportunity for you to kind of figure it out. No one's going to be blown away if you go out there and drop a ton of yards and points on Samford, but it can give you momentum. And as we saw in 2017, that momentum can be helpful.
And I heard Chris Hatcher this morning being interviewed, and he said, hey, the first thing we've got to do is stop Auburn's run. So, I mean, they're going to be doing everything they can to try to make Auburn be one-dimensional through the year. So it's like
because
asking,
as of right now, the Auburn passing game is just not proven.
That's right.
At all.
29.8 pass attempts per game for Ole Miss last year.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, that even a team that you thought of as run-heavy as anyone in the league.
And they ran it about like 50 times a game last year.
All right, we need to get to our first break of the afternoon. Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer with Bill and Dan here in the studio. Drew, once again, at the controls. Love for you to join in. You can call us, 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, which you can find however you listen to podcasts. Go to your favorite podcasting platform and search for The Drive with Bill Cameron, rate, review, subscribe, or go to ESPNAU.com and use the Podcast Center.
And we'll be right back. Come on in and join us here on the Thursday Drive.
Hey guys, this is
ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive, 24 minutes after 4 o'clock here on this Thursday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer. So while we've got a minute or two, catch us up on what all's there at the Observer. What you got coming up?
Yeah, it's been a fun week. So today we had our preview podcast. Dan and Painter and I previewing the Samford game. A lot of the stuff we talked about in the first segment. You can hear a lot more on that in there today. Also, the third edition of the 2013 series. I went back and broke down the game week 3 of the 2013 season, Nick Marshall and Auburn going 88 yards on the last possession to beat Mississippi State. The little throw to CJ Uzoma in the end zone. Really fun.
Great catch.
Great wonderful throw. Great. I mean, a dot, too, from him.
A tough catch and a great throw. Yeah. Perfect. It had to be right there.
I mean, there's this thought that goes back where people think, hey, you know, Nick Marshall, the runner, is like, Nick Marshall, when he was cooking, throwing the ball, like, he was a really good passer. Not just a, you know, I know he wasn't always statistically like the strongest, but like when he had to make the throws, he could really, really
Nick
do
Marshall
it at a high
was
level.
The most he was the most accurate passer on the team. Like, that's the thing about 2013 that gets lost. And people have made the argument since then. Oh, play this other guy because he's a runner, even if he's not the most accurate. No, Marshall won the job being the most accurate passer and also had those skills with the ball and his feet. But, I mean, even Jeremy, I think their careers prove that Nick Marshall was a more accurate passer over the course of his career.
A guy who was a pro corner and still is at this moment. Let's see. Also this week, film room breakdown on all of what happened, what Auburn can learn from their offense against Cal. Did a story on Eugene Asante and Donovan Kaufman, why this scheme and this coaching change has really made those guys stand out. Here's a fun stat for you. Eugene Asante's blitzed 9 times this year. He's gotten home 6 of them. That's insane. That is insane efficiency for a linebacker. Donovan Coffin's got similar numbers as well. And then also a story on Kay and Lee. Here's another fun fact for you. Kay and Lee, okay, so in the last decade, only 3 true freshman cornerbacks at Auburn have played 100 snaps in a game, or in a season, sorry. 100 snaps in their true freshman season. Kay and Lee has already hit that mark in 2 games. Also,
well, a lot of that has to do with the fact that Nehemiah Pritchett hasn't been out there.
True. If you look, though, the last time that I can tell that a true freshman has started at cornerback the first 2 games of the season at Auburn was Carlos Rogers. It's so rare for a guy to be ready. Yes, you're right. Like Nehemiah Pritchett, if he's healthy, Kay and Lee's probably not playing as much. But the fact that Kay and Lee has been ready to go says a lot.
And he hasn't been torched.
Nope. Corners are so – I thought he was one of the best players on the field against Cal. Did a really good job of bouncing back from some of those earlier – you know, some of the problems he had in the game. But, yeah, it's so hard for young corners to play. It's the toughest job in football, and you take a true freshman out there and say, good luck, kid, have fun. And Kay and Lee's held his own. It's UMass and Cal, yeah, but, you know, if they can get Nehemiah Pritchett back, you feel like you have 3 corners that you can roll into the season with pretty confidently.
Yeah, and then Champ Anthony's playing a little bit.
Champ Anthony's playing as well.
How would you handle Nehemiah? I mean, you'd love to have him 100%. Going to Texas A&M, but I'd also love to have him knock a little rust off this week. I mean, you know, I've heard some people say, don't play him so he's 100%. It's like, he is a veteran, but I'd still like to have him, you know, be on the field and move it around a little bit if he's healthy this week.
If he's healthy enough to play on Saturday and they feel like it, I think there's no harm in giving him a few drives. Again, anything could happen. You know,
sure. Anybody can get hurt at any time.
Right. I do think the rust thing is real. I think we saw that with Jarquez Hunter last week.
No question.
And I would expect Jarquez to have a bounce back game. But again, I came out of that Cal game not downing Jarquez as much, and I don't want to sound very negative about Jarquez because I'm not. I just think what Auburn's got in Damari Austin and Jeremiah Cobb, you lean on that. You know, not go away from Jarquez, but
you got to figure out how to get all those guys touches. I mean,
and Brian Petit too.
Hugh Freeze was talking about 5 and 6 in the passing game, but you got to figure out how to get those.
I think the receiving game is also big for those guys as well.
Well,
they can be weapons.
When Jason was in yesterday, we were talking about that, about the possibilities of, you know, having a couple of backs in at the same time, maybe using one in the slot or something like that, because some of those guys can catch the ball well. Yeah.
You go back and watch Jeremiah Cobb at Catholic, they split him out wide a lot, especially when they were in obvious passing situations. It's really a weapon they can use. But, yeah, I think you could, if you can play Nehemiah some, play. I get what people say, don't risk it. But, you know, you'd probably like him to not have his first snaps of the season come against Texas A&M.
No kidding.
I wouldn't think. But so we'll see. Good news for Auburn, though, is it sounds like Donovan Kaufman, there's optimism that he'll be able to be healthy, at least, you know, for next week. That's a good sign.
Now, he's one that I wouldn't push it.
That one's a little more.
I wouldn't push it.
And he's played a lot
already. He's played very well for 2 games.
And it's a head injury. You know? Yeah. Well, a lot different there. You have to worry about that. But I will say, the rest of the team, or anybody you thought of like, maybe, or, you know, what's going on with them health-wise, all out at practice on Tuesday, nobody in a non-contact jersey. I mean, Austin Keys is still the only long-term injury concern for this team right now, which I think is a pretty good sign.
Yeah, I thought it was big that apparently Larry Nixon is going to be fine because, I mean, you're pretty thin there at linebacker, and, you know, you'd be on your third other backer opposite Eugene.
Yeah, and that's the thing with Eugene's obviously played really well. Larry's played well. I do wonder if time or kind of situationally, if Cam Riley is if they figure out, or if Cam just kind of gets a little bit more plugged in, because Cam's been asked to do a lot in his career. He's learned so many different defenses and different things to do, And I think this system can be very good for him. I think Auburn's still trying to figure out the best way to kind of utilize it. And they need him. They need him. I mean, they could really, really use him out there. And I will say Saturday as well, interesting opportunity for maybe, you know, a guy like Robert Woodyard or, you know, somebody down on the depth chart. Just get some opportunities and say, hey, if you need me moving forward, I can be reliable. And I think Auburn could use that at all three levels of their defense. And obviously, I think Saturday is going to be a big day for, hey, wide receivers, who's it going to be? Who wants to step up? Who wants to prove that they need to be part of the game plan for A&M?
Yeah, do you need 5 and 6 to get more touches against Samford?
No.
Or do they, you know, have they no. almost?
No, I don't think. I don't think
say
they
you don't use
to.
Them.
No.
I think they're going to. I don't think it needs to be a concerted effort to get those guys.
No, I think it needs to be a concerted effort to see it that somebody else deserves to get the ball.
Exactly. Like I almost wonder if you take it easy on 5 and 6 this week because the other guys need
And here's the thing. I don't want to put too much stock in a guy we haven't seen a ton of yet, but like the other problem Auburn runs into is I think their most talented receiver on the roster is another guy who's a slot guy, and that's Caleb Burton.
Now he didn't play at all, did he?
Yeah, he can't get on the field right now because the other two slot receivers are the two best receivers on the team.
I mentioned on the podcast.
You might be able to see Burton slide out to the outside zone.
Had Chick Dawson not jumped into the portal, yeah. He'd probably be on the roster.
He'd be one of your top four. There's no question.
Well,
he's the same size too.
Yeah. Let's think about it though. Since Seth Williams, and I think Seth might have been the only one in that run. You look at the last several years of Auburn wide receiver play. All the good ones have been smaller.
Seth
was
right.
Kind of the exception to the rule. And since Seth, they haven't found another guy to do that. Now, could they get that out of Shane Hooks or Camden Brown or if Nick Martin's healthy? We haven't seen him yet.
Jair Shorter's not little. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe. I mean, there's still plenty of time. And wide receiver is one of those positions where, I mean, I think anybody who plays fantasy football can tell you, just because a guy doesn't make plays in a game doesn't mean he's done for the rest of the year or anything like that. Like, it is a position group that's got a lot of variance. But, like, this is the week to kind of – who's going to step up and show out? And I know it's Samford, and again, no one's going to be blown away if you put up numbers against Samford like long term. But I do think personnel wise, it's a big week. It's a big week for what Auburn can do.
We need to get to our bottom of the hour break. Love for you to join in again. 334-321-1390. That'll get you through here on the Thursday Drive.
ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive, 22 minutes away from 5 o'clock here on this Thursday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer. Love for you to join in. Do you think you'll see? What do you hope you'll see this Saturday? There are a few games that should be one-sided. There are a few games, and we'll talk with David Paschal, by the way, in about a half an hour from the Chattanooga Times Free Press and ESPN Chattanooga.
I think David might be the only person on the planet who can make Week 3 sound good.
Well, I mean,
especially in the SEC.
There are a few games that I don't really know exactly what to expect. I'm a little interested when I see how large the line is or how small the line is in a couple of ball games.
What's during our game? What would be like the second screen game for folks?
Is that 6 o'clock? Well, I mean,
is that Florida?
Since,
is that Tennessee, Florida?
For a lot of people, it's going to be tough to do a second screen when it's just streaming.
Yeah, Tennessee, Florida.
Florida would be the game. Okay, yep. So we'll be keeping an eye on Tennessee, Florida in the press box maybe during the Auburn game.
Tennessee, I still want to see how Joe Milton does. I know there's some people that just think he's going to just absolutely blitz Florida, and I'm not so sure about that.
And it seems like folks have the knives out, too, where it's like, oh, well, if Florida loses as a 7-point underdog at home to the number 11 team in the country.
Bye-bye, Billy.
Billy Napier's finished, and it's like, well, I think this seems to me like one of the tougher games on Florida's entire schedule.
Yeah, it definitely is.
Like, if they lose this game, they could still turn around and beat Kentucky or South Carolina or Vanderbilt.
Thing with Billy Napier is like they're recruiting so well and they need to keep that together because if you get rid of them and you lose that class, you're going to be back to square one.
Two steps back.
I think there's probably a belief in the athletic department of Florida that if you were to replace Billy Napier with a bigger name, you'd be able to retain that recruiting class, because a lot of those guys are maybe excited about playing for Florida as much as they're excited about playing for Billy Napier. I don't know.
Potentially.
Because I remember that was Matt Luke was recruiting well during his final season at Ole Miss.
Not like this.
But that was one of the thoughts was, oh, you're imploding the. Well, and there was also the talk that the roster would all leave because they loved Matt Luke so much, and then
Lane Kiffin to Matt Luke. Matt Luke, a guy who just had the job thrown at him. Like, it wasn't like Ole Miss was like, you know what, we really like this Matt Luke guy and we think he's the best candidate available. It's like, no, we need a coach. Here, and then it was like, we'll keep you around for a while.
Was it Finebaum today throwing Dion out as a Florida candidate, which to me would be just a fascinating turn of events for.
I couldn't.
That's because he knows his audience doesn't want to talk about him being Nick Saban's replacement. I mean, because his audience would turn on him. Paul's house would.
You don't think that's a popular idea?
I think it might be, but to some people,
sure.
That would be. Heresy,
sure.
You know, to say anything like that, even though
Do you think Nick Saban could pass the torch in like an Aflac commercial?
Yes, through the duck
in the commercial. You could do it that way, and that's how we find out.
Give the torch to the duck, and the duck gives it to Prime.
That's how we find out.
Yeah.
That Saban is the Dion's the successor. I don't know.
That would be the whole thing with Dion, and I do wonder what that's going to end up looking
like. Florida State
like.
Fans would lose their minds.
Is he an SEC
Florida.
Coach in the next?
That's
like,
the other thing. That's the other thing.
I think he's an SEC coach before too long.
So the thing about Nick Saban that everybody knows is that, yes, he has had some of the greatest collections of talent ever at the college level, but he's also one of the best minds, especially on the defensive side of the football, in college. Like, he's a great X's and O's coach. We have not seen that from Dion yet. Dion is a recruiter and a CEO, and he's done an excellent job with that. It's funny, though. It's like when you go to the SEC – when you go to a place like Alabama where there's really, really high expectations, everybody's going to have really good talent. Everybody's going to recruit well. They're not, maybe not as good as you. But, like, what has made Saban the cut above? And I would say, especially with what Kirby has done and the hires he's made with the score, what has made them even better is that not only do they get a lot of talent, but they also utilize it really well. And I'm not saying Dion's not capable of that. It's just we haven't seen that. He was coaching high school football like 4 years ago. And so that's what would make it funny. Is like, who should replace Saban at Alabama? Well, I don't want to be that guy if I can be.
No, you would think that's a lot of folks, a lot of coaches are going to go, no, I'll wait.
But
and we'll see what happens to the immediate successor.
You don't want to underestimate the X's and O's value that Nick Saban has brought to Alabama in the past, 15 years. Like, he's one of the best to ever do it, especially on the defensive side of the ball.
The thing about Dion that's so interesting to me, and it's why I am really curious to see if it works and really curious to see if he's a pioneer, would be, I think if Dion succeeds at Colorado, there's going to be a belief that you can hire someone who doesn't have experience in college football, but their celebrity and the notoriety they gained as a professional
athlete can allow them
to jump the line, and they can use that celebrity to recruit be maybe more effective
as a recruiter. But he at least had some experience in college football.
Hey, the smaller version of that is already happening in this state. There is no reason Trent Dilfer should be the head coach at UAB in terms of his resume alone. But UAB wanted to get that kind of hire and that splash, and we will see if it works or not.
Yep, you're right.
I don't think it will. But.
And we'll see if schools, especially if Dion works, we'll see if schools think, okay, who's our most prominent former player,
you need to be
alumni?
In coaching. You need to be in coaching at some level.
Yeah, that's true. And maybe it's that you're willing to overlook a lack of traditional experience because of an overwhelming amount of celebrity and time spent in the professional ranks and something. I don't know who the next name Peyton Manning would be a good one, I suppose.
Peyton would make a lot.
Philip
of sense.
Rivers at NC State potentially, if he wanted to go back to his alma mater, or Philip Rivers if he wanted to go into college
and
football coaching.
Here's the funny thing: we see this in college basketball. It's what Penny did at Memphis. So in college football, it being a lot more.
See, so here's that.
You got to find the right.
That
spot,
would be
though.
If Oklahoma is a Oklahoma struggles. Josh Heupel goes to Oklahoma, and Tennessee goes, Peyton, be the guy.
They'll try Gruden one more time.
I don't know. They may go Peyton over Gruden this time.
Probably.
Maybe try Kiffin again. Maybe it'll go well this time if they bring. Bring Lane back.
Lane will be somewhere else in a few years.
And I don't think it's going to be the University of Alabama.
No, I don't either.
Is it just when you get, and maybe it's just when you're winning at Ole Miss, people are convinced that your coach is you know, talking to real estate agents and thinking about
where
he's...
Yeah, because you're Ole Miss.
Yeah, it's too bad, right?
We're already talking about Deion's next job.
I know. It's just the way it is. I guess that's the way it is.
Sorry, Colorado. Yeah. But, like, you know, it's you're not at that level.
What he's been able to accomplish as far as the afterthought that was Colorado football.
Oh,
last year.
No question.
I mean, they were. I mean, have you seen the image? The image of kickoff at the final home game of the season last year at Colorado.
Oh, yeah.
Versus kickoff at the Nebraska game. I mean, it is a ghost town versus a stadium that was filled to the brim with tens of thousands of people outside watching because they couldn't get into the, like, the attention he's been able to bring, yeah. The buzz he's been able to
bring.
It
was a gamble, and we thought it was. A lot of people thought it wasn't going to work this well this quickly, but, man,
I sure wasn't shocked that they beat Nebraska. I was at the TCU game.
I think TCU's a lot worse than
we've got to see about TCU. I'm really interested when they get into conference play, see how things go.
I do think at a tradition.
They're going to score some points.
Sanders
can play.
At a place that thinks of itself as tradition-rich, like, if you bring Deion Sanders in, you're probably throwing a lot of that tradition away and it becomes the Deion show. At a place that had struggled as much as Colorado had over the last three decades.
But had tradition as well.
They had tradition, but at a place that
had been a while, though. It's been a while.
I mean, they've got national titles.
Yes, but when you're talking multiple decades of struggles, like, I could see why it's more enticing to think, like, okay, maybe we can't traffic on stuff that happened in the 70s and 80s. Deion Sanders brings a completely new flavor to Colorado, and more people watched, and granted there's an asterisk because of the spectrum thing, but the fact that more people watched Nebraska Colorado than Alabama Texas is a stunning is a stunning testament to the buzz Deion Sanders has brought to college football.
It's funny, now you've talked about this a couple of times. I'm still hearing that Alabama Texas had more viewers.
If you factor in people who weren't watching on ESPN alone, like if you go to the Pat McAfee simulcast and some of the .com, like you go to the streamers.
Okay, maybe those combined. Because I've heard and read that the Colorado game was the second highest watched game.
I think it was the second most watched or second highest rated, but most viewed, because there's also, like, if you factor in total viewers versus 18 to 49s, like, different shows can claim to have won the night depending on, like, which audience.
Yeah, it's just funny. It's confusing when I hear this one had more viewers, but this one had a higher rating.
I'll tell you something that just popped in my head. Dan, we were talking about, like, hey, if you're a good coach at Ole Miss, people will be looking. If you're a good guy, let's not forget, Notre Dame and Oklahoma got their sitting head coaches poached. Like, anybody can get it.
Right.
Anybody can get it. I mean, there's probably only like two or three coaches in the country where you would say they're not going anywhere 100%. Like, anybody can get poached. And so, even with a guy like – now with a guy like Deion, that makes it even, like, crazier, because it's like, all right, what's the next step? Colorado's about to be in the Big 12. Colorado's in a conference that is going to last – for a little while longer, still a tier below what you would get in the Big Ten and the SEC. So, like, what's that next move? You know,
I would think it's going to be to the SEC.
If you, dude, I got an advance on the ratings question. So if you combine ESPN and ESPN2, which had the Pat McAfee simulcast,
If you combine that, then that's more.
If you combine both of them, that's
more than the Fox broadcast.
That's 8.76 million viewers for Alabama Texas on Saturday night. 8.73 million watched Colorado-Nebraska on Fox earlier that day, which is still, I mean, Colorado-Nebraska was, I mean, those were two teams that were, I mean, they were in the mall that's going out of business last year. And now,
there's a reason they changed coaches.
Yes. And people were tuning in for Matt Rhule, all due respect, right? Yeah. Like, that wasn't the coach. Yeah.
Can I give you a Deion Sanders next job that makes a ton of sense in my head, because I think they would definitely do it.
Is it college football?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Texas A&M.
Oh yeah.
You talk about your teammates. They are so desperate.
He'd be going back to another one of his homes there. Yeah.
They hired the wrong Seminole. last time.
They sure. But what's the thing about Jimbo? Is that Jimbo is like, you know,
He's about to get fired.
He's a great recruiting offensive coach, supposedly.
Yeah. Of an era.
Yeah.
A decade ago.
Uh huh.
You know, and obviously he's recruited well now, and it's not like A&M's been terrible, you know, forever. But if you think about a fan base that is so obsessed with the fact that they've never won the big one in the modern era, and they will do anything, they will spend whatever money they have
because
they have a lot of it.
Nobody
and
could outspend them.
No, they'd be the ones to do it. It'd be fun. It'd be fun to see what they would do because if Jimbo Fisher can sign the number one recruiting class at Texas A&M, I mean, Deion walk in and get it every year. You'd get it every year at Texas A&M with him. So it'd be interesting to see where it went.
No kidding. All right, we'll get to our final break of hour number one. Love for you to join us here on the Thursday Drive.
You know who I think.
334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back in. Final couple of minutes of hour number one. Yeah. Yeah, some of those, again.
Tom Brady at Michigan. Sorry.
If Harbaugh hadn't worked out the last couple of years.
Burt Reynolds. Is that going to work?
I don't think that would work, no.
I'm trying to think of some other ones. There's got to be some.
Celebrities.
And we were talking about this the other day, is that I think you can make an argument that Deion Sanders is the most famous football player who didn't play quarterback, like maybe in the history of the game. And then we thought about O.J. Simpson for a different
reason. Yeah, that's true.
The other one somebody brought up, and I didn't think about it, and it's a really good one, is somebody mentioned John Madden. Like, obviously. Like, Madden ended up being, like,
you have to get – no, for the purposes of this, you have to have gotten to the pros? Like, you have a professional football player?
No, I wouldn't. Because
I would say The Rock is absolutely in that mix, having played college football and now
known for playing football.
Yeah, I was going to say that there are people that don't – that wouldn't know
yeah,
that.
No,
he just
no,
know him yeah. for football.
Known
just
for playing, known for being
needs to
football.
Be somebody who's known for football as well.
Yeah. But I do think Jim Brown was certainly up there before he passed away.
Right.
Like Jim Brown was
but
absolutely.
I would think Deion's that guy, at least now. Mm-hmm. Deion's that guy.
You know, Bo's in this conversation.
Bo would be in this conversation as well. But it's like Deion kept himself in the public eye with his TV work and then obviously making the switch over to coaching and doing a really good job so far.
It's wild because I would think like receivers are often the most prominent, or some of the most outspoken players while they play. Mm-hmm. But like, who's the most? I mean, Jerry Rice is the best. But
how many of them do you think coaching candidates?
Yeah, well, not just that, but also like just in terms of maintaining that celebrity after they play.
Randy
Moss is probably the most famous.
Yeah.
T.O.'s, a guy everybody, people
Michael
know.
Irvin.
Yeah, Irvin, who's, yeah, I mean, but like.
But again, it's those guys kept themselves in the public.
Yeah, but it's not.
Miami
really
can hire Michael Irvin. Let's do that. Isn't Irvin a Miami guy?
Yeah, I think Miami's
feeling okay right now.
Yeah. He's available, I believe. I believe Irvin would take the call because I don't think he's appearing on NFL Network at the moment as they sort out whatever happened during the Super Bowl with him.
Oh, but he's on.
Oh, is he back on somebody's?
He's on FS1.
Okay, good.
He's on one of Fox's shows. Yeah.
All right, we're halfway done here on the Thursday Drive. Bill, Dan, Justin Ferguson. We're going to be joined by David Pascal in just a few minutes. Love for you to join in as well in hour number two of the Thursday Drive.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome into hour number two of the Thursday Drive. Hope everybody doing well. What has turned out to be a pretty nice afternoon. Bill, Dan, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer here in the studio. We've got Drew at the controls. In a couple of minutes or so, we will bring in David Pascal. He's just wrapping up his show on ESPN Chattanooga that runs 2 to 5 our time, 3 to 6 Eastern. We'll bring him in and get his thoughts on this past week and take a look ahead toward this week. We were talking about it a little bit. We'll get Justin's thoughts too. I mean, yes, it is not the most exciting weekend in college football. We'd mentioned Tennessee, Florida. I think a lot of folks surprised at the fact that Kansas State, the number 15 team in the nation, is less than a touchdown favorite at Missouri weekend.
We've seen road conditions bother some teams. We're still figuring out how good everyone is. So I think it'll be interesting to see a Missouri team that 2-0 didn't look stellar in the opener. Right, went down to the was it last week against MTSU?
Yes,
where that game was close right up until the finish. And so yeah, we'll see a little bit more about Missouri. Kansas State. They've had little trouble through two games, including
they throttled Troy last week,
including a win against Troy.
Man, Troy, I'm feeling a little iffy about Troy this year. They just didn't seem to have
a good year last year,
and they just don't seem to have the offense right now. Mm-hmm. And they got a tough game Saturday. They host JMU on Saturday.
Slight favorite
in the game that should have been the Sun Belt championship game last season, but JMU wasn't allowed to play in it. So,
I mean,
JMU's a 3-point road favorite.
Troy's got a quarterback who's coming up on 1,000 career attempts as a college football quarterback.
They've also got a backup that has an
Goose. Right?
Yeah, it has an insane name. I love it.
It's Goose. It's Goose something. I just know he's Goose. Kansas State at Missouri. I could see. I find myself rooting for Eli, right, in these situations. Like, it'd be cool to see Missouri.
He's a fun guy.
Shock the world and pull one off against a top 15 team.
That would be former West Virginia transfer Will Goose Crowder as the backup quarterback at Troy right now, and he's going by Goose in the official roster, which I love.
Yeah, why not?
Where are you on LSU Mississippi State?
Well, let's
Do we have basketball?
Let's talk to somebody who would know a lot more about LSU Mississippi State than me.
I thought we were still efforting past.
No, Drew went ahead and was quick on the dial time and got him. Usually we give David a chance to catch a breath after the end of his show, but no such luck for him today as we welcome in David Pascal from the Chattanooga Times Free Press and ESPN Chattanooga. David, how you doing today?
I'm doing fine. Speaking of catching breath, I had a question for y'all real quick. Because Hugh Freeze, and I heard Dan on the teleconference yesterday, Hugh Freeze, I guess he was explaining how to Montgomery at 9 a.m. and then was back at Auburn at 10:30. Were there Auburn fans to, greet the team? That would have to be wild to, go to early church and then, come out and greet the team as they get back.
I'm not sure what all that process was. They came straight back to campus, it was a late night flight because we were talking to them while I was in California. They got done with the interviews. Eugene Asante was the last interview, and they were like, "Yeah, we're getting on the plane right now." And it was just like, "We're going to try to make it to Auburn at a reasonable hour in the morning." So yeah, I'm not sure if they had a welcoming party in Montgomery or Auburn for them, but they did get the luxury of being able to just to fly straight after the game.
Yeah, Justin and Jason Caldwell and Nathan, you guys were flying out and everything together, and it was when? It was Monday.
So about noon on Sunday in San Jose. Yeah, so we got back late Sunday night. It would have been a lot better just wake up in Auburn. That would have been nice. But, it's a that's why they get paid the millions and millions of dollars when it comes to all the stuff that flows through a college football program.
Hey, whether or not they had a welcoming party, that was a whole lot better flight back after winning that thing. Had they lost it, David, that would have been miserable for everybody. No matter how bad people felt about the jet lag and getting used to it, much, much better to come back with a win. It wasn't pretty by any means. But that's a whole lot better than an L.
And you're right, and I think it was Justin. Justin is the first place I saw it. What a statistical anomaly! Teams the last 5 years were 1-65 when they failed to reach 15 first downs and turned it over 4 times. I mean, that's just a recipe for losing. But you're right, Bill, because I mean, the way that game ended with you're running out the clock And so you're very deliberate, but it gave Cal and the officials time to see that last fumble. That was a crazy, that would have been a crazy way to lose a ball game there.
Well, it was a crazy way to start it and nearly a crazy way to end it. So, yeah, there are so many things Auburn has to work on. There were some things. I mean, the running game, when they held onto the ball and didn't commit a penalty, the running game was fine. And we've talked about it, David. I really believe that Auburn thought they'd go in and not have to show much at all, try to keep Rivaldo Fairweather a secret, I would think, until they went out to Texas A&M. But when it came down to it, you got to have the guy that's going to be able to make those plays, and they had to show him and use him and needed him for the win.
Yeah, and there are countless examples at Auburn of coaching regimes that get going, and there may be that real close call. I mean, you think about the special season Auburn had in 2013 under Malzahn and what a close call they had. I guess you had Starkville, there were some crazy close games that Washington State, that very first one. I mean, you know, there have been some close games that you got to win early to build things. Terry Bowden, same type thing when he was there and had the big first year. But, yeah, like you said, you definitely would rather win one of those things. And it's a dream for a coach because you get the message across to the players, mm-hmm. and you're doing so after a win.
Oh, yeah. And here we are. It's week three. There's still quite a few teams you don't know exactly what you have. I mean, after week one, you had the overreactions, and there were so many people, you know, thinking that Alabama was going to take it out on Texas last week, that Miami was Mario Cristobal could be in trouble. It's like we know more than we did after the first week, but there's still so much that we don't know, and they're going to be more of these as we head on through the season.
Yeah, and I mean, I'll be in the swamp Saturday night, and just think about how much we're going to learn both about Tennessee and Florida. I mean, the perception of Tennessee, speaking of overreaction, I mean, that changed in a week. I mean, they blister Virginia 49-13 that first game, and defensively looked real strong. Defensively, they had a couple of breakdowns against Austin Peay, but it was the offense that just really struggled. That's the lowest point total that they've scored in a win under Heupel, and it just happened to be under Austin Peay. I mean, Joe Milton struggled in throws that were 10 or more yards downfield. He was just 1 of 10. Not all of that's on Milton because there were some drop balls. So all of a sudden you've got Tennessee kind of questioning itself a little bit, and of all places having to do that in the swamp where you haven't won since 2003, I just think the closer we get to this game, I wouldn't be shocked if we saw a score similar to what y'all experienced out in Berkeley. I mean, I think it could be, you know, Tennessee's defense has been much better than its offense to this point. Florida, if you take away their first play of the season, that 70-yard touchdown they gave to Utah, they were really nice defensively the rest of that game. I don't know how much you can learn against McNeese, but, you know, Florida's given up 191 yards a game. They're one of the top five defenses in the country right now. I know it's a teeny tiny sample size, but this game kind of has the feel that it could be really low scoring potentially.
David, last year's Tennessee team was so impressive offensively, but so many of those guys have moved on, right? Hendon Hooker and the top two receivers all in the NFL now. Do you think people were mistaken when they assumed that Tennessee would just be able to keep things rolling offensively, without missing a beat when you replace as much as they did? Or do you think it's still early and this offense could find its way sooner rather than later?
Well, you think about last year and after Hooker went down, but that was a Vanderbilt coming off a win at Kentucky and a win over Florida. I mean, that was a Vanderbilt team that was 5-6 and needed that win for bowl eligibility. So they had stuff to play for and just got clobbered. I mean, Milton hit a 60-yard pass early in that game to kind of open things up for the running backs. But then you have that great, thorough performance against Clemson. I mean, nobody expected Tennessee to win that game in the Orange Bowl by 17 points. And then, you know, the Virginia opener was fine. I mean, that was a 35-3 game midway through the third quarter. But, you know, you heard Joey Halsley, the quarterback's coach and the first-year offensive coordinator, say the thing I've really liked about Joe Milton is he's really developed the touches on it. We all know he can throw it 90 yards or 80 yards or whatever, and he throws a rocket, but the touch he's been able to put on the ball is where he's really improved. Well, against Austin Peay the other night, you saw none of that. You saw the same overthrows by him that you saw early in that 2021 season before he got hurt and was replaced by Hooker. So there's some uneasiness that the old Joe Milton, that you haven't quite shaken him yet, because you definitely saw some really obvious overthrows the other night against Austin Peay.
And this ball game is huge for the Gators and Billy Napier. I mean, not that that his job is on the line if they don't win, but it could be such a big win if they do.
Agreed. And I mean, you know, I don't know if y'all watched the Swamp Kings deal with Urban Meyer, and you know, I'm watching that first episode, and he's recalling his first season, and he's talking about, you know, I was worried about getting fired. And I'm like, you know, Urban Meyer's first year at Florida, he beat Tennessee, he beat Georgia, he beat FSU. There's something about beating your rivals that can keep you around for a long time. Well, Billy Napier went 0-3 his first time around, and I don't see any chance of them beating Georgia, and I don't see any chance of them beating Florida State. So this may be the best shot in his first 2 years of winning a rivalry game. So you're right, it is big for him. I mean, you think about how he's 7-8. He's recruiting very well, but the here and now, you know, and it's my understanding they're getting some pieces back that they didn't have against Utah, an offensive lineman that was at media days that they didn't have. And, you know, as bad as they looked against Utah, I didn't put any of that on Mertz. I actually thought Mertz looked okay.
Yeah, I did too.
You know, he connected with Pearsall. He connected with Burke. They couldn't get that running game going. And with Montrell Johnson and ETN, that's a nice running back duo. You know, this game historically, I'd have to look up the stat, because for a while there it was like 16 out of 17 or 15 out of 16 where, and it's a simple stat, the team that rushes for the most yards wins. That's been a very profound stat in this series, and I certainly think that could come into play Saturday night, because Tennessee's averaging like 258 rushing yards a game. They're like fourth in the country running the ball, but you just saw how inept Florida looked running the ball against Utah. Obviously, they fixed it against McNeese, but that's McNeese.
David, I couldn't get past the Swamp Kings advertising that made it sound like Florida football before Urban Meyer was like Auburn basketball before Bruce Pearl or something, where there hadn't been any success in decades before his arrival or something. That's not how I remember the 90s and 2000s going for the University of Florida before Urban Meyer got there.
I know. There's so many things you could nitpick with that, because, I mean, even Zook was all over the map, but he'd kind of wind up 8-4 every year. I mean, Zook even had a winning record against Georgia. You know, when he left a really nice cupboard, you know, for Meyer, because they obviously won a national championship in his second season. Yeah, they took some liberties on that, and I even never got – I'm the world's worst at, like, starting something. I didn't even finish Ozark. I mean, I loved Ozark, but I didn't even finish it. Cobra Kai, our kids loved Cobra Kai. After about the first or second year, I punted on that. I watched 3 out of the 4 Swamp Kings episodes because it was obvious they weren't delving into the off-the-field stuff.
No,
I mean,
you just
needed more balance. And, I mean, they just kind of, you know, they barely touched on it. I'm like, well, if this is all it's going to be, you know, I remember what these Florida teams were like. I really don't need to finish this thing then.
Yeah, well, I haven't even started it. So, I mean, we'll see.
Well, Auburn likes to get rid of it because Urban never beat Auburn.
Oh, that's true. Hey, before we get a couple of thoughts on this week, got to get your thoughts on the Alabama-Texas game Saturday.
Yeah, shocking just on multiple fronts. I mean, just the lack of pressure, the inability to get to Ewers, just getting torched by Ewers. I mean, you from all things that you were reading and hearing, you thought that this Alabama defense was going to be better, and for 60 minutes at least, they just got absolutely torched. And I thought it was very interesting. As soon as the game was over, Nick Saban, you know, was asked, did you consider playing multiple quarterbacks? And he said, I did. He said, but when Melrow led us on that drive that put us up 16-13, I thought it gave us confidence and we kept him in there. So who knows how that's going to, you know, Nick Saban said from the get-go throughout preseason camp, just because you're the starter and the opener doesn't mean you're going to be the guy. So I think Milroe needs a big first half against South Florida. I don't think there's any question Alabama should roll in that game. But do they play multiple quarterbacks against USF? And if so, that could become a potential storyline all season long.
If Alabama can't figure things out offensively against USF, if we're still talking about the questions, that game against Ole Miss in just about a week and a half becomes, if Alabama's offense is questionable, that game against Ole Miss is a lot more interesting than most Alabama-Ole Miss games could be. We'll see about that. How about this week? LSU-Mississippi State? What are your thoughts on LSU going out of Starkville?
Big favorites.
Yeah, and you know, this is kind of a lopsided rivalry. I think since 2000, LSU's won 20 out of the 23. I like LSU. I don't know that I like them by a ton. I have to admit, I've seen zero snaps of Mississippi State. I know they're night and day. You know, Mike Leach never had a 100-yard rusher in his 3 years there. Joquavius Marks gets 100 yards his first game. You know, you're not seeing Will Rogers throw it around as much. So I know it's a completely different look. I have not seen them play. I don't know how good Arizona is. You know, the Pac-12's off to a good start. You know, Mississippi State beat Arizona by a lot worse last year out there. I picked LSU by like a touchdown. I just, that's a perfect example. Like we talked about, there's still so much we don't know that we'll learn more about this weekend.
Oh yeah. And then, I mean, Georgia, a 4-touchdown favorite over South Carolina. You know, I've had some people go, well, I mean, Spencer Rattler isn't going to survive the game, and he may not. But Georgia hadn't exactly been sacking the quarterback and playing as dominant as anyone would expect, but then they haven't had to.
No, and Bill, everybody they've played has run that quick game where, I mean, they're trying to get the ball away as quickly as possible. They've allowed 10 points all year. That's second in the country. And you're right, they've got one sack all year, which is last in the country. So it's kind of a unique combination to only give up 5 points a game, and you're averaging half a sack a game. But yeah, opponents are running the quick game on them, and I would imagine South Carolina is going to have a lot of that element as well. My big deal would just be kind of the South Carolina's offensive line has been so bad and looks so brutal against North Carolina. You know, it could very well be a deal where South Carolina has a really difficult time scoring. I mean, I think the average of this game the past 3 years has been like 44-12. And I picked it something similar. I went Georgia like 41-10. I think Georgia, you know, takes a step forward against a better opponent than the first two and really puts it on them.
All right, side bet here for the room. All right, Pascal mentioned that Georgia is the number two scoring defense in the country. Do you guys think he knows who number one is, the one team ranked ahead of Georgia?
Yes, I think David knows.
I think he does.
Georgia, do you know who's ranked ahead of Georgia, David?
Yeah, it would be mighty Syracuse.
That's
I think they really benefited from that 65-0 win over Colgate. I think that helped them.
7 points in two games allowed for Syracuse. That probably changes Saturday night against Purdue. We'll see, though.
All right, and you said you're going to be down in Gainesville for the Vols and the Gators. What are you thinking?
I'm thinking 20-17 Vols. I think it'll be lower scoring. If you'd asked me 2 weeks ago, I would have said, you know, if you'd asked me the night after Florida played Utah, and then I guess a couple of days later when Tennessee played Virginia, I would have said Tennessee by 17. So I don't know. Again, that's kind of part of the overreaction part. But again, Florida's getting some pieces. I'll tell you a weird stat. This is a weird stat. When Dan Mullen was at Florida, they sold out four times at the Swamp. This is Billy Napier's fifth sellout. So they would have already sold out more times under Napier than they did under Mullen. So the place is going to be rocking. If Florida can get a big play early and rattle Milton's confidence, this could get really weird.
That is a crazy stat. Great stuff as always, David. We really appreciate you spending a little time with us. Let everybody know how they can keep up with everything you're doing.
TimesFreePress.com and ESPNChattanooga.com. And Auburn wins the award for earliest homecoming of the season, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, when you go cross-country, it is a homecoming. So,
guys, have a great weekend. I always enjoy it.
All right, David. Thanks a lot. You too. We need to get to our first break here in hour number two. We'll open up the phone lines. Love for you to join in. 334-321-1390. And the hour number two of the drive is brought to you by the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840 on the drive text box. The podcast, if you missed any of David, podcast The Drive, presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, go to ESPNAU.com or use your favorite podcasting platform and search for The Drive with Bill Cameron. Rate, review, subscribe. That's all presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors.
Come on in and join us. We're right back here on the Thursday Drive.
Hey, everybody, this is Jacob Goins from ESPN.
ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Yeah. Welcome back into The Drive here on this Thursday. Thursday, of course. Means Tiger Talk.
That's right.
Right after the drive over on Wings 94.3.
Wings 94.3 going to have Tiger Talk as Auburn gets ready to take on Samford this Saturday. So Tiger
Dan just wants free food. I think that's what we just got to the bottom of. Here.
I mean, that's although I'm still
that is
you know
fact.
a lot of places still owe me and Justin for that for that Food Observer episode we did a couple of weeks ago, critically acclaimed episode of the show that we did, but yeah, Wings 94.3. You can hear Tiger Talk starting at 6. Andy Burcham and company gonna have a great show as always as we get ready for homecoming.
Homecoming Saturday evening on the plains. Again, we've talked about the temperatures are going to be very comfortable.
So it was a sellout.
Yep, it is.
Wow.
And let's see.
Not
so,
very many places are going to sell out an FCS game.
No. No, you're right about that. And you might think, well, maybe homecoming, but like David Pascal said, this is as early a homecoming as I can recall.
Yeah, mm-hmm. UCLA's got NC Central this week, and I don't think that game is
a sellout. Golly, they better pay them a lot.
Well, I believe, you know what?
Them in?
Well, I believe the Pac-12.
Is that part of the Pac-12 deal?
Yeah, the Pac-12 has made a conscious effort to put more HBCUs on the schedule.
That's why USC is coming to Alabama State right before they play Auburn this year in basketball.
Alabama State played at UCLA last year in football. Mm-hmm. And so that's been part of the, like, if they're going to schedule, I guess the Pac-12 decided.
If you're
going to
play.
If you're going to do the paycheck games, you're going to play the games against FCS teams, more of them should be against HBCUs. And so, yeah, but a strange game, you're right, NC Central in the Rose Bowl tomorrow night. That game, not a sellout, like Justin was just saying.
And it's interesting because that part of the country is a country that does not have HBCUs now.
No, that's
not
right.
Ones that play athletics. So, yeah, it's an interesting little setup there. And also in football, the FCS teams out there are usually pretty good. that's the part of the country where FCS football does really well.
Jim Harbaugh was a champion at San Diego before making the jump
USC,
up to before making the jump up to Stanford.
So in a conference, by the way, that used to be my favorite conference in football, the Pioneer League. It was an FCS conference. I think it still exists. Where like if your conference didn't sponsor football, you could join that conference. So, like, San Diego was in the same conference as the University of – or, I'm sorry, San Diego was in the same conference as Jacksonville, Florida. Like, that was a game they had to play.
Yeah,
it was like Davidson was in there for a while. Nice. Like, it was just a – Like FCS teams were going all the way across the country to play.
That is wild. I didn't realize that.
I think Auburn is the only SEC team playing an FCS opponent this week, as a matter of fact. You look around. I mean, there's some Group of Five games. Akron's going to Kentucky on Saturday night. Vanderbilt making the trip to
UNLV. Yeah,
Vanderbilt making the trip to Vegas to take
on. Where's that 2-for-1, Auburn?
Yeah, Justin, I'd like your thoughts on that, Bill. Justin wants more 2-for-1s against like Group of Five teams. Yep. Where you go play
like Alabama's doing with USF.
Like Alabama's doing with South Florida. Yeah, find a city. He threw Tulane out there as one on the podcast. Where it's like, yeah, you know,
go pick a destination that people are going to will travel to. And by the way, Auburn's crowd in Berkeley was really, really good. It was a
phenomenal show.
I'll throw one out there. It's because they got that all that Myrtle Beach advertising all over the stadium during football games. Yeah, 2-for-1 with Coastal Carolina. Go let people make the trip out to open a season at Coastal. Or something, and
if
see
people
if
wanted to see Grayson anyway.
So yeah,
or doing it now.
Or I mean, we've also Georgia State is one of our favorites. You know, Atlanta's not exactly an exotic.
Yeah,
enough
it's not
trip.
Like think, oh boy, we haven't been there. I think I'd want to go somewhere where you haven't, where you just don't go regularly.
What about Southern? What about Statesboro in that situation? I mean, Statesboro is a little.
I want more of. I want more of a
little bit more
destination
Savannah.
City.
Yeah, I
a
mean,
destination.
Yeah. Statesboro,
San Diego, Houston, New Orleans.
The destination you'd get with Statesboro would be Savannah, but that's probably not metropolitan enough for like a trip like that. I mean, no. Coastal is a little bit further away. I mean, Boone is a cool trip if you were willing. I mean,
basketball's making it this year.
Yeah, I mean, basketball's doing the trip to App State. You get a little bit further north in the Sun Belt. You get places like Old Dominion, which is that's Coastal Virginia. James Madison is a couple hours outside of D.C. Marshall. If you wanted to play in the, if you wanted to play up in the,
I think we're stretching the definition.
Cold country. I'm losing some of the, losing some of you on some of these road games in the Sun Belt.
Yeah, I think we named all the ones that make sense.
But FIU,
yeah,
it's Miami. Yeah. I mean, it's South Florida.
It's not a great part of Miami.
Not really. You don't see a lot of 2-for-1. I mean, I guess that's. Because South Florida also plays in an NFL stadium, which I think was part of the draw for Alabama to schedule this game. Is it, like you were saying, with stadium size being a consideration? Like, I don't think Alabama would have scheduled a 2-for-1
in a stadium that's like 30,000.
FAU or FIU or something like that. Like, I think it would need to be either a place with a large, either a Group of Five program with a large stadium or I guess the possibility of playing it. You know,
somewhere
else. Yeah, if they play in NFL. So, I mean, what's Houston plays?
Oh, Houston's
Houston's a Big 12 team. Yeah, it's not even. I mean,
you would play like Rice, or you'd play.
Where's Sam Houston?
Play one of the DFW teams. Sam Houston
is that Dallas?
Is it now? It's in. Sam Houston is in Huntsville, Texas, I think, and I can't remember where Huntsville is off the top of my head.
Maybe.
But yeah, you can play the DFW teams, North Texas, SMU.
Bama a 35-point favorite against South Florida in Tampa
They're going to score a lot.
Yeah.
A lot.
Hey, if you're out there looking for lines, I'll tell you. The team that has played Michigan has covered twice this year. That's a perfect 2-for-2. This is the last of the Jim Harbaugh games. Michigan, I don't know if any of y'all, I briefly saw part of Michigan's game last week.
They
looked like they did not care at all about scoring quickly. They were just running the thing and working the clock down, and I was just like, okay, well, I think they're 40.5-point favorites against Bowling Green or something this week.
I mean,
it's a little too high for me.
It's the worst out of conference schedule in the country.
Georgia
can say, well, they would have had Oklahoma.
It would have been Oklahoma, but Michigan's is awful, and that's the thing. I can't stand Michigan fans, but it's the thing about Michigan fans that like get me all the time, because they'll be like, oh, look at the SEC playing these teams in November. And it's like, yeah, well, you played nobody in September, and you also get to play Northwestern. Like, you're not any better than us.
Now, let me be clear. I would be fine with the SEC turning that game in November into a conference game if they decided to do so.
Yeah, and just play all of your cupcakes early.
I also think that the out-of-conference game in November, you know, is generally not a very competitive game.
That's supposed to be homecoming. If you're going to play one then, it's supposed to be homecoming.
But the reason why it's not homecoming is it's right before Thanksgiving. And nobody shows up for that.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, that's the problem that they run
into
now.
But then you have a situation like the one Auburn does now where you have a homecoming 2 weeks you have a homecoming 2 weeks after the opener that everybody came to.
2013 had a bizarre schedule. I went back when doing this series and looked. They played Florida Atlantic like in the middle of the year. Like, it was like week 7, and they're like...
Well, it's either... Yeah, you would either do that, or you would have had your open date at a different... You know, right. You have your open date there, then you'd have to find another game.
Right, so like Auburn...
That's the thing. The conference says, here are when your conference games are. Mm-hmm. Now, plug in the non-conference and find when the open date.
And obviously, there's some SEC teams that are starting this week. You know, Florida, Tennessee, LSU, mm-hmm. Mississippi State. But yeah, it's kind of funny that everybody doesn't start at the same time. Like you would think it would be a little bit more streamlined. Maybe it will be with the new format coming up. But I've always thought that was odd. That like, hey, you're starting SEC this week, but everybody else isn't. Like, it's just odd.
I mean, we've seen other conferences. I mean, Duke Clemson opened the season.
Yeah.
So
Ohio State, Indiana.
Yeah.
And there used to be, I remember a few A&M South Carolina, the Kenny Hill Heisman game.
Auburn,
was
Arkansas.
A Thursday night.
Of course,
Auburn, Arkansas opened
Auburn,
the
Arkansas
season.
Was a season opener. Yeah.
And there were several years 14. when the Khaki Bowl between Ole Miss and Vanderbilt was an opener, a Thursday night opener too.
Now I imagine there's widespread opposition to opening the season with a conference game. If you
can avoid it around the league.
Oh yeah,
like that's. I mean,
yeah, I know. We are way behind. I realize we flew past the bottom of the hour break. We'll get to your calls when we come back. Come on in and join us here on the Thursday Drive.
On ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive. Final 20 minutes or so here on this Thursday. Bill, Dan, Justin, and let's get to the phones. And Terry is up. Hey, Terry.
Hey, Bill, Dan, Justin, how y'all doing this afternoon?
Doing well. How are you, Terry?
Hey, bud.
Fantastic. Justin, I want to tell you, I appreciate the comments earlier you did on the show about the quarterback situation, because there is a group of Auburn fans that want there to be a quarterback controversy and want to see that dual role. For the life of me, I don't understand why, because I've always subscribed to the theory, if you have two quarterbacks, you have none. So,
yeah,
I just don't know.
I think you can use Robbie Ashford in smart ways, but this whole swapping him back and forth, running the whole offense thing, there's not a whole lot of proof of that working.
And I don't know of anybody that really wants that. I think what it is, Terry, is there are a lot of folks that want one or the other. I mean, there's some that want Peyton, there's some that want Robbie. And there are some folks
who have already given up on Peyton. It's just too early. I think it's too early to pull the plug. Year one, a lot of newness for everybody. It's going to take some time and some patience. You know, especially with a new quarterback.
Well, the biggest factor to me, it kills momentum.
Yes.
Yeah, I think it killed momentum a couple of times Saturday night, late Saturday night.
And I think that when you're playing two quarterbacks, and again, I'm not. So we can ask Don Dunn about this tomorrow because I've never coached a game. But when you're playing two quarterbacks, I would imagine that there's also a mental strain on the quarterback in the game. There's concern if I make a mistake. Is it going to be the end for me? Is he going to press and try to make an unnecessarily big play because he wants to shore up his playing time? Like I would just be worried about how that could play games with a guy when he's on the field, but he's not really in a stable position as the starter at quarterback. And I thought both quarterbacks pressed on Saturday night for Auburn, maybe because they know they're a mistake away from not seeing the field or a big play away from seeing the field a lot more.
Yeah, Dan, I think you're 100% right. I just, like I said, momentum can't get established. And Dan, this is where I agree with you the most. The cadence has to be an issue, too, for those teammates. They can't have the same cadences.
Oh, you know, when Chris Todd used to come on the show, our good friend, and we'll ask him about this sometime. I'll reach out to Chris, see how he's doing. But he talked about how something fans don't think about when they want to see a two-quarterback system or they want to see quarterbacks rotate is it's difficult on the center and the receivers who, you know, work with one quarterback and you know how he throws the ball.
Sure.
To suddenly adjust to the other guy. It's difficult for everybody else out there.
Sure, appreciate it. Guys, have a great day.
Appreciate the call, Terry. Yeah, I mean, that's some good points, too. I mean, everybody, it's the receivers. Quarterbacks throw the ball differently. It's the balls are differently, you know, They come in at different velocities, different spins.
I hadn't really thought about that before Chris Todd made that point. It was a couple years ago when people were talking about playing, God, it probably would have been Bo and Joey Gatewood at the same time, which is fun to think about in hindsight. But there, you know, that was when, you know, people were like, well, if you're alternating between Bo Nix and Joey Gatewood, here are the things that would be different. And it's not just about how you call plays. It's the adjustments everybody else, the other 10 guys, have to make.
Think about, the guys aren't the exact same size. They don't have the same stride. When you're talking about running backs, timing, getting to the mesh point. I mean,
timing's the word. Like, it really is. It throws off the – and that's sort of one of the reasons why – not the only reason, but it's one of the reasons why most of the time, the higher you get in football, it's one quarterback doing all of the work.
The fewer
at the
snaps
position
you see for the backup.
Yes, and that's – I think that's part of the reason why.
334-321-1390. Justin, you said early that you have some feelings about what Auburn's got, what Auburn has now, what are their strengths now? What are the things that Auburn really needs to work on? That's what you have to be doing as a coach and as a team. You've got to, as you get a game or two under your belt, you got to know what you can do. And has Auburn really found out yet? I mean, maybe they have in practice, but I don't think they've tried a lot of the things that they feel like they can do.
No, I think defensively you've gotten close to an identity. I think this team is going to, and it's a Ron Roberts defense. They're going to blitz a lot and try to create things that way. Also in the running game, a lot of run blitzes against Cal, which worked out for them pretty well. But yeah, offensively, I think for them it's just, they need to use this game to work on that passing attack, because you cannot be one-dimensional and make it through, especially these next three games you're about to go through if you're Auburn, in SEC play. So I think for Auburn, it's just, you got to find the receivers you can rely on. You know that Javarius Johnson and Jay Fair are among those. You know that that Rivaldo Fairweather can make plays for you tight end. You know your running back room's deep, and you can rotate them. And if you get good blocking, those guys can make some plays. You got some explosiveness back there. But you got to find the wide receivers. It's really kind of the missing piece right now. I'm not saying, if Auburn figures it out, they're going to be a juggernaut this year. I never thought this offense was going to be just lights out this season. But I do think they have what it takes to be a solid offense, win some games in the SEC, build a bridge to the future. They got to get that last piece, and it's getting the quarterbacks and the wide receivers on the same page and figuring out who they can trust.
Yeah, I mean, I guess one of the things you really you want to see, and it's not going to be a great test, because Samford's defense isn't going to be anything like what you're going to start seeing.
Their defense does not look good at all.
But you better see confidence and poise and, things like that out of your quarterback and the guys that you're hoping to be playmakers.
Hey, go out there and let it rip. As we mentioned earlier, 2017, Auburn got Jarrett Sidham sacked about 7,000 times at Clemson. Barely had any yards, lost badly, I think only scored 6 points the whole game. The next week, they turn him loose, and Jarrett Stidham threw the ball a lot and did it confidently, had a great completion percentage, great yards, all that good stuff. Week later, they go to Missouri, and they feel like they can air it out more, and they feel like they knew who they could get the ball to. You got to do that here. I'm not saying you have to throw for 300, and I'm not saying it's going to fix all your problems for A&M, because A&M's a different team than what they placed in Missouri in
17. However, A&M's secondary really struggled.
Auburn takes a shot. Auburn takes a shot downfield, I think, on one of the first two or three plays of the game against Missouri too. Like, I think in that 2017.
Yeah, Kyle Davis.
Like, I think Auburn. Auburn. I mean, there's a deep ball very early.
Kyle or Darius.
Yeah, or I might. For some reason, I was thinking Craig Myers, but it might have been Kyle. Yeah. It might have been Kyle.
You just see, like, it's all about confidence at this point, right? Like, no one's going to go out there and say, "Well, we hammered Samford. That means we fixed all of our problems." It's more of like, hey, the next time you step out onto the field in a competitive environment, do you feel like, oh, I can do this? I can do this. I know where to go. I know who to throw the ball to if you're a receiver. Like, I'm going to be in the game plan. I'm going to get the ball. Like, that's what it's all about. It's all about momentum.
I'm willing to dismiss the fumbles as fluky. If it happens again, happens again, you start thinking, oh, boy.
The two running back fumbles are like, that's tough. That's tough, especially, with Damari getting slammed on his head on one.
Yeah, I thought he might have a concussion.
I thought he was KO'd as well, but you know, came in and played well. Yeah,
he really did. Auburn needed him down the stretch. All right, let's get to another call before our final break here this afternoon. Jerry is up next. Hey, Jerry.
Hey, guys. I would really like to see Cobb split out as a wide receiver or put him in motion and, you know, get him to ball some more touches.
You know, that was something Jason Caldwell threw out yesterday as a possibility, is that if Auburn can't, if the number of receivers Auburn feels comfortable playing, if that number diminishes and they're looking for guys who need to be on the field and can make an impact in the passing game, maybe they get creative with the way they use Cobb and Batie to draw. I mean, I don't know if it's necessarily having them run routes like wide receivers, because that's not what they specialize in, but you know, it's getting the ball to the guys you want to have the ball, and Jeremiah Cobb's made a pretty compelling argument through the first 2 weeks that you got to figure out ways to get him the ball. And I have to imagine, Bill, that Hugh Freeze wasn't thrilled with the way Batie was deployed on Saturday night either. And maybe maybe there's a way to work him into the offense a little bit more. Although he's got to make good decisions on kick returns.
That is true. I wondered if that had anything to do with the fact. Of course, the fact that Auburn only had 50 some snaps probably had a little to do with it. But no, I agree that there's some guys that can make plays, and you can't make them watching on the sidelines.
What about the thing, a celebrity athlete that might be a successful head coach?
That would be popular as a head coach. Yeah, who do you got?
How about Tom Brady?
Yeah, no, I think Brady makes a ton of sense, especially the ex-quarterback for sure. Like, just – I mean, Michigan has had it set up and rolling for a while now with Harbaugh, but like I mean, heck, they're handing the man a job in TV without ever him doing any of that. So why not?
Am I crazy for thinking that Brady, like, he's charming and he's unquestionably successful as a quarterback? I wonder what kind of TV analyst he's going to be. It seems kind of dry.
Boy,
they're
going to pay him an awful
lot.
Yeah,
he's going
to
do it. And what, you know, the shame there is that I think Greg Olsen has turned into one of the best guys.
Greg Olsen's great.
I think Greg Olsen is maybe the best guy calling football as an analyst in the game now, after just a couple of years, and he's probably going to get pushed to the B team when Tom Brady shows up on Fox, which is too bad, because I think Greg Olsen should be. He should be calling
that Kevin Burkhardt, Greg Olsen team is very good.
Like I would hope that they realize what they've gotten Greg Olsen, even with Tom Brady coming in.
We need to get to our final break. Back with as many calls as we can squeeze in. Stick with us here on the Thursday Drive.
This is Lee County Revenue Commissioner Olene Price. When we have the opportunity.